Yes. Now look, what happened, dear people? We are still here.
Yes, sir.
We are still here. And I advocate the same high moral standards and even greater moral standards than my father advocated. I insist that women be respectful of their natural dignity, of their natural womanhood and motherhood. I insist that women dress as Muslims and do not insult themselves or degrade themselves and go around looking like whores, cosmetic prostitutes. I insist that they look like decent women, that they keep the same long dress, cover themselves so that they won't be an object of excitement for lustful men. With my leadership, the moral strength of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has come back into force. With my leadership, the dope pusher has been pushed out. The one who peddled the dope from our stations have been excommunicated. He has been driven out. Oh yes, the one who sent the men out to rob banks, he has been driven out. They look at me and they say, pillbox hat wearing, post office looking, a low-key man. This low-key leader has been successful with the help of Allah and his supporters. I've been successful in doing something that the police department can't do. I've been successful in ridding my community of criminals, dope pushers, bank robbers, thieves, hustlers, pimps. I have made those snakes go into their homes. They won't show their face to Imam Wadisuddin Muhammad. God has blessed me. God has blessed me to drive out the thieves, to bring the charities back to the cause, to the purpose they are designated for. God has blessed me to take the burden of financial burden or the economic pressure off of the people of our community and make them free.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have.
God has blessed me to take the 300 quota, the 300 Muhammad Speaks quota paper off of you. No man now is obligated to carry 300 papers a week. No man is obligated to take more than half of his check and give to our community. But he's obligated to shoulder his responsibility first to his wife, to his baby, to the well-being of himself and his family. That's first. The Nation of Islam made that last. And the consequence of that kind of policy was that few imams had diamonds, patent leather shoes, mink coats, yeah, mink hats. They were rich pimps, and the majority of the people were struggling and hustling just to bring in another $10, just to bring in another $40 to the temple. Men struggling out in the street with fish rotting. They paying for it out of their pocket. Yes, they getting insults from the public because they sold the public rotten fish. They wouldn't even give them a decent refrigerated truck or something to carry their fish around in. Hustling fish. Some were so foolish to believe, because they were able to make $200 a week hustling fish, that they had a great economic program. What kind of economic program is that? That keep a man on the street 12 hours every day of the week hustling funky fish for $200 when he could go and work for Bethlehem Steel or U.S. Steel and make $400 a week? Huh? What kind of great liberation plan is that? These old ex-leaders of the Nation of Islam that's trying to frighten you all away from me to serve the divisive scheme of the races of this country, they are nothing but hypocrites and liars. They try to make you believe that the economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a reality. The economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was an idea. It never became a reality. Millions of tons of fish was brought in, certainly. A cargo of appliances was brought in from Japan, certainly. All of that's admitted. But the majority of the members were virtually in a slave camp. They were virtually in a slave camp. And their economic status wasn't rising. If that program was such a great economic shot into the arm of the members of the Nation of Islam, how come Farrakhan is crying the blues now? If that economic program was such a masterful plan and a great success, how come Farrakhan, John Muhammad, my uncle in Detroit, who never was able to do an honest day's work either, how come those ex-leaders of the Nation of Islam are crying the blues? If that program was so mighty, how come they didn't stick with it? Where is the financial progress to show that it was mighty? I know what they tell you. They tell you that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had the money, and when I came in the office, I took your money. You don't believe that. You know those liars. If the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had all the money and nobody was established, his program was still a failure. If he had all the money and nobody established, I say the program was still a failure. This is important because we have people here who are very sincere. People here who want to retrieve their dignity, who want to smile on their ancestry, and they want to be economically self-sufficient. They want to be economically dignified. You see, they are here. They have differences with me. They are not real differences. They are artificial differences. And I think if you listen to the facts long enough, you will join me hand in hand. And you will realize that I am the best of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Now, let me go back to this thing. We had in Chicago, I'm going to quickly give it to you. We had in Chicago, the Muhammad Speaks. We had in Chicago, the Fish Program. We had in Chicago, real estate. We had in Chicago, retail business. All right? When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed, the real estate was a failure. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed, the Fish Program was a failure. There are those who say it was a success. But anytime you are pressuring your members to give money into charity so you can buy more fish after being in the fish business for more than a year or 2 years, that means your fish business is a failure. How come you're still going in charity, pressuring people to give money to show up a business that's no business? Yes, the Fish Program was a failure because the people were being pressured to give their charity into a fish program. Their charities went into one lump, and the money was taken from that to buy more fish, to order more fish. Fish come, lost. The big Pioneer building, big, beautiful building. It's a credit to the community, but it didn't have substance. That building was not profitable. It was not rented out. It was not making a profit. It was a constant drain on us. We had big farms. There was a brother working his tongue out, working his life out to make the farms a success. What we brought in was really nothing but mockery. What we brought in from those thousands and thousands of acres of land was nothing but a mockery. That's what it was. Brother brought bringing us through a few semi-truck loads of watermelon once a year. Bring in some apples, few truck load of apples, once a year. That should come from about 40 acres of land. We had thousands of acres of land. And all that come in is a few semi-trucks of watermelon, a few garden vegetables, not enough to sell to Chicago. Wasn't enough garden vegetables to sell to our community in Chicago. Wasn't enough vegetables to supply your supermarket that we own in Chicago. all of our hundreds of thousands of acres of farm never even supplied one supermarket. And every year, it was an economic failure, and every year, you were being pressured and drained for your welfare money, for your hard-earned money, to put it into these so-called economic programs.
Right.
I'm giving you the facts, and these are the facts, Brother Imam, that you must give these people so they will know that their economic leader is here. I'm not going to lead you down some blind alley of economic progress, presenting a false show of economic success. If we can't have real financial success, I say let's stand where we are until we can move solidly ahead. Yes, and I'm not going to pressure poor people to put one minister in a Mercedes-Benz, to put one minister in a Mark 5 or Mark 6, or in a cat-like, a brand-new cat-like, or to put him in some big mansion, him and his wife and his children, in some big mansion, and all of you working as slaves?
Yes.
No! They say that the Imam program is a total disaster. That's what my critics say from this old Nation of Islam, that my program is a total disaster. They try to make you believe that I'm going around begging the Arabs for money. We have some Arabs right here today. Do you think I'm reading a text for them? I don't read no text for them. If I was doing something for the Arabs, I would have a written text. I wouldn't take no chances on speaking from my emotions. I would make sure I didn't say the wrong thing, fearing that I might offend the king of Saudi Arabia, or the president of Libya, or some other great leader, you see, or Rabatar, or Muslim World League, or the Islamic Federation. I would be reading a text. Very seldom you see me reading any notes. Shouldn't that tell you I'm free? I'm free. I don't belong to anybody but Allah. I belong to Allah. And I'm leading this community to dignity. They say the Imam have lost the following. Who are these people? Who are all these Muslims I see here? So the Nation of Islam, it ain't what it used to be. Oh, they used to have many. They have dwindled down now to almost nothing. Look how full this place is. Do you know, before I came into office, do you know what it would take to fill this place up like this? About 2,000 men out on the street with circulars, placards, begging the people, pulling them by the arm, threatening them that they're going to kill them if they didn't come in here. I haven't even begged anybody to come here. They know I'm coming, they're here. Don't nobody have to force them to come. In fact, many of them are forced away. Because my enemies are working too. The Imam, he said, come down. The chief's going to be here today. But I have hundreds of enemies who say, the chief ain't coming. He gonna be alone. You watch and see. The chief ain't coming. He just using the chief's name. They do that to hurt my crowd. But I don't worry. Because my crowd is humanity. And when I speak from humanity, my crowd hears me. Yes. And they can be at home not knowing I'm here. That don't mean they're not here. They just don't know I'm here. Dear beloved people, I walk these streets and I run into people every day. You don't know how many Muslims there are. You think we just have this crowd of Muslims. No, we have hundreds of thousands of Muslims in New York. That's not here today. We have hundreds of thousands of people who identify with my leadership who are not here today. But they will kill you over me. And it's mutual. I will kill you over them. We are united in this common sense humanity. We are united and we are sincere. We want real progress. We don't want any shysters leading us. We don't want no pimps. We don't want no hustlers leading us. Whether they are hustling charity or hustling the federal taxes. We don't want no shysters and pimps and hustlers leading us. And my people who with me, they know I'm such a leader. They know I don't take no wooden nickels from nobody. My own blood brother, he was the police of the Nation of Islam. His name is Elijah Muhammad Jr. I remember when I differed with my father, and my father rejected me, told me I had to be excommunicated again. And the Supreme Captain, who was my blood brother at that time, Elijah Jr., he's big, he's muscular, he's taller than I am, heavier than I am. And then I was very light, I got fat now. I ain't doing the Muhammad Ali shuffle no more. So I'm getting fat. Yes. He stood in my face, right up close to me, and said, Wallace, you know we don't take this off of others. He said, you know what can happen to you? I said, yeah, nothing at all unless Allah allows it. And the Supreme Captain Sharif kind of sunk. His big chest kind of sunk. And he looked at me and he didn't know how to deal with me. Couldn't deal with that. He saw faith that he didn't have. So now I'm telling this man, boy, that I can turn the fruit, the FOI muscle on him. And he's telling me that nothing can happen to him unless Allah allows it. He just stepped right out of the way. And I walked out of the house. I got threats. They said, you and another fella are both on the same list. Be careful. Came around my house late, early in the morning hour. Knocked at my door. Shot gunfire in between my house. Shot the gunfire. You think I got up and called the police? No. I slept. It woke me up. I went back to sleep. One day I got out of my car. I was getting ready to go to my destination. It was at night too. Someone fired a pistol, maybe it looked like maybe in a block or more down the street. A pistol, or I don't know, it could have been a rifle. The gun, the bullet hit the pave, and the spark was about 100 feet or so in front of me. You think that shook me? No. I have lived with death all my life. I've lived with death all my life. That was nothing new to me, that somebody wanted to threaten my life. That was nothing new to me. I have lived with that kind of threat all my life. I felt that people will kill me all my life. Yes. So nothing changed me. Now look what happened. Why am I telling you these things? I'm telling you these things so you can see that the God that saved Kamal al-Din is protecting this leader and protecting this community. The God that gave Randy back his leg, Allah that gave Randy his leg back, protecting me, protecting this community. That's what I'm telling you this for. I came back, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad put me over the people who were threatening me. I came back, and he put me over the Supreme Captain, Elijah Muhammad Jr. He put me over Minister James Shabazz, who was over Chicago's messenger. Temple, it was called at that time. He put me over him. And before he died, he had his staff. His staff was all there at the table. The minister's staff table at his own house, the National House, we call it, the National Palace. And he told them, after he had listened to a tape, that they brought him thinking that they were going to get me excommunicated again. He, after listening to the tape and expressing his pleasure, he told them, my son, he said these words, my son, he can go anywhere he wants to and teach. He said, my son can go anywhere on this earth and teach. Then he looked at me. He said, son, preach that gospel. He didn't say, son, stick to W.D. Farrar's lesson. He didn't say, son, stick to the actual facts. He didn't say, son, stick to Yaqub's history. He didn't say, son, stick to my program of separation. He said, son, preach that gospel. That was the gospel that he had on tape that they brought in to indict me. There are at least 40 witnesses to this. 40 living witnesses at least to this. Now, you might say, well, how is this that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad preach that the white man is the devil, and you preach that all humanity is one? And how is it that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad preach that the black man is God, or that Farad Muhammad was a God in the person, and you say that's wrong? How can you say he supported you? Without knowing the Honorable Elijah Muhammad personally, you won't understand that. If you knew the Honorable Elijah Muhammad personally, you would understand that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad never had no Yaqub history hang up. He never had no black hang up. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a practical man. He was just using the bait for an emotional people. And he knew that your mind and thinking was most susceptible for that bait at that time. But as the mind of the American Bilalian began to change, began to progress out of blackness into full humanity, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself began to de-emphasize Farad Muhammad, the English lesson, the actual facts, the Yaqub theory, and all that other stuff. He began to de-emphasize it. He put more emphasis on economic progress. He put more emphasis on the unity of his people, on the moral dignity of his people, than he did on some mythical doctrine of W.D. Farrar. Oh, yes. Let me tell you something again. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in his personal life, entertained white guests at his house. White guests sat at his dinner table, drink coffee out of his gold-trimmed coffee cup, ate food from the same precious dishes that the ministers ate out of, the national secretary ate out of, Caucasian guests ate out of the same precious dinnerware. He was not hung up on no blackness. These people who say they follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad now, who are all hung up on this blackness, they couldn't invite the white man to eat out of their best china. Why, they would go into convulsion if someone would suggest that a white man eat out of their best china. That's a devil. Never will a devil set foot in my house, and the devil might be renting it to him. But he'd tell that devil, you ain't gonna set foot in my house. He wouldn't give him a drink of water out of his dog dish. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave the Caucasian coffee out of his best china cup, food out of his best dishes. Yes. And he won many friends from the Caucasian people. Now, let me tell you something else. If you study the history of our people from the day that they came to these shores till now, and study my leadership, you will find that there is a natural growth, a natural progression from slavery to Imam Waris al-Din Muhammad. Oh yes, the civil rights movement have given up the freedom struggle for dignity of the ancestors. They are not looking for dignity, the dignity that the ancestors wanted. They are only looking for what we call transit, the transitory or the transit kind of life for their people. They offer their people no permanence. They are not calling their people to moral strength. They are not calling their people to strong principles of life, strong human principles. They are not even calling their people to any kind of strong community life. What is the civil rights leadership doing for our decayed, degenerated neighborhoods? They're trying to bring money in. Will that solve the problem? What are they doing to bring substance back to the mentality of the people in the neighborhood? What is the civil rights leadership? What is the Black Caucus? What are they doing to bring substance back to the mind, to the mentality of the people in the neighborhood? Do we have moral leadership from them? You answer me. Do we have moral leadership from the Black Caucus? Do we have moral leadership from the civil rights movement?
No.
Do we have moral leadership from the politicians?
No.
Do we have moral leadership from the church?
No.
You have answered, no. They're not offering us moral leadership. The church follows the dollar. The politician follows the dollar. The civil rights leaders follow the dollar. They sacrifice morals. They sacrifice human substance. They sacrifice the investing in posterity just for the dollar that's passing by their nose today. How can you say that of Benjamin Hook and still say you love him? Because that man is a victim. That man have never gotten out of America. He's not responsible for his mind. He's not yet living in a context, a knowledge context that can support his thinking, his life, his whole future. He's not living in a knowledge context that will support his mind, his emotions, his whole future. I excuse him. He's a victim of the divisive schemes of America's racist environment. He is a victim. I excuse him. He can't offer moral leadership because he is sick. Because he's handicapped, because he's a root out of the ground. He's not in his own soil. He's a root out of the ground. So he's limp as a flower that's out of the ground with no water, with no soil bed to grow in. He's not responsible for himself. The society is responsible for that. But once he hears the ring of my ancestral truth, and he doesn't wake up to it and come to my leadership, he's responsible.
Yes, sir.
Oh, are you saying that Benjamin Hook should follow you? If he doesn't, he's a traitor. He's a traitor to David Walker. He's a traitor to Nat Turner. He's a traitor to Frederick Douglass. He's a traitor to Dr. Martin Luther King. He's a traitor to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He's a traitor to Malcolm X or Malcolm Jamal. He is a traitor to everyone who had real concern in the interest of our people if he does not identify with my leadership. Yes. God is going to divide these people. God will divide these people. And he will prove those to be nothing but hypocrites, liars, pretenders, that don't want any real substance for themselves and their people. All they want is a lie, an excuse to escape their responsibility, to keep putting the burden on the other man. Dear beloved people, let me tell you something. I move not only in the body of the Quran, or the context of the Quran, I move in the context of the freedom movement. There is no voice in America that speaks as strong as my voice for the aspirations of our ancestors. Not a single voice in America that come anywhere near speaking for the aspirations of our ancestors. No, indeed. I am the true leader of the aspirations of our ancestors. If Frederick Douglass was here, he wouldn't follow Benjamin Hook. He wouldn't follow Farrakhan. He would follow me. Yes. If Malcolm Shabazz was here, he wouldn't lead me. Malcolm Shabazz would become my right arm. I can give you a living proof of this. Before I even came into this leadership, Malcolm Shabazz wrote in his autobiography that the only one that he could point to that had a way out for the Nation of Islam was Wallace D. Muhammad. That's in his autobiography. He didn't say the only one is me. He said that he has been an inspiration in my life. I'm not quoting him word for word, but Malcolm X says in his autobiography that I touched his life. They try to say I'm following in the tradition of Malcolm X. I'm following in the tradition of myself that God has set me upon. Malcolm was influenced by the kind of leadership the Honorable Elijah Muhammad offered him. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a wise leader. He would excite your mind to even become free of him. And then when he saw you were free, he would remind you that he had the control. And now, brother, you must do this. Now, brother, you know you have to do this. But he didn't want all of us locked up in some narrow Yaqub history. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad excited our appetite for bigger and broader things. Yes. And when we expanded, he was satisfied, but then he would caution us to stay in the rain, to don't get free of the rain. Right? Malcolm was envied in the community. And there was forces operating from out of the community to set the leadership at odds against itself, to cripple the leadership of the Nation of Islam. Malcolm was a victim of the outside infiltration. He was a victim of the plan to weaken and cripple the Lalian leadership in America. He was a victim of that. So he was forced to go out on his own. Malcolm, in going out on his own, he set up his own organization and his own leadership. But Malcolm never at any time took up the crazy idea that some of these people have now. No. Malcolm wasn't going at no dollar. Malcolm was trying to awaken the moral conscience in the people. He was trying to awaken the dignity in the individual. He was trying to make us morally responsible to each other. He was not saying, let's get some money. Let's get some money. Malcolm was saying, let's free the intellect. Let's free the morals. Let's free the personality of the oppressed. Right? Yeah. Now, these new leaders, all they doing is crying over money. Just crying over money. Where is the moral leadership? They don't have it. We come now to the present time, and a man who's the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has succeeded his father. And the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in spite of all the media adverse kind of things, dulling kinds of reports they have made, I am still in the leadership. After 5 years, I'm still in the leadership. They said in the first year, oh, they won't be around long. They're running out of money. They're getting ready to collapse. This is the fifth year, going into the sixth year. They said, they don't have any plan, no program, but we're still around. They said they're losing their Islam. Look at these sisters in their Muslim dress. Look at us say, assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum assalam. More of us now are acquainted with our holy book than ever before. Before, only a very few of us even had the holy book. The ministers had the holy book. Very rare if you find the ordinary follower with the holy book. Now every member, if he doesn't have it, it's his own excuse, because we have gotten free Quran and have passed them out to the membership. Every member got the Quran if he wants to. Today, every member can go in business if he wants to. They say, they're not making no business progress no more. We got brothers selling as much fish as we were selling as a nation. Yes, we got individuals now who sell fish on their own. And they sell as much fish as we did as a whole nation. We got individuals making more business money, more dollars from business profits than we made as a whole nation. I remember in Chicago, if you were experienced in restaurant business and you wanted to go into that business, you had to work for the restaurant in Chicago. If they didn't need you, you had to forget about restaurant business. If you opened a restaurant in Chicago, your restaurant was boycotted. You would be brought up before the congregation and they would talk about you like a dog. You might get stomped on by the foot of the FOI for opening up a restaurant in competition with the Nation of Islam restaurant. We had one restaurant, couldn't accommodate more than about 150 people at one time. And we wouldn't even let other people open a restaurant. One restaurant couldn't even accommodate the whole membership if everybody would patronize it. And we wouldn't allow an individual to open a restaurant. Same thing, the same policy failed on, same rule failed on all business. If the Nation of Islam had a grocery business, you couldn't open a grocery business. If Nation of Islam had a newspaper, you bet not go in the newspaper business. These are facts. Everybody know it. Now you might say, well, it wasn't that way in New York. We could have our own business in New York. You better be glad you wasn't in Chicago. And I'm sure in New York, if you wasn't in the clique, you couldn't have your business in New York. You had to be in the clique if you had a business that New York was in. Am I right or wrong? All right. That's New York saying yes. New York is speaking. If you wanted to go in the grocery business and the temple had a grocery business, if you wasn't in the clique, number one friend of the high ups, you couldn't open that business. If you did, they might stump your brains out. That kind of policy strangled our community. It strangled our community. We couldn't see the growth in the community that was there. Now we have people in the business. We have a brother not far from me who's in the fish business. He has a fast food fish business. Doc's fish business. If you ever go to Chicago, you go around Dorchester, 7087 in Dorchester, you can go to Doc's fast food fish. And he's selling more fish than we sold in our restaurant. His gross, his net from his fish business is more than the money that we grossed from our restaurant under the old administration in a period of 3 years. He take in 1 year more than we grossed. He take in net 1 year more than we grossed over a period of 2 or 3 years. Yes. Those farms that weren't producing anything. We have sold those that we can't manage. If we couldn't find people to lease them, we first offered to the community. nobody in the community could manage 10,000 acres of land. We had nobody in the community to do it. I'm no farmer, I can't do it. So we would have to trust outsiders. So we leased to outsiders. Some we had to sell because we couldn't find lease for them. That big deficit that we had in our farmland is now beginning to look bright for us. It looks like pretty soon we're not going to have any deficit. We're going to start realizing some income from farmland. In about 2 years or 3 years from now, from one farm, we will have net anywhere from $250,000 to $400,000 a year, net from one of our farms. This is what we see in the future. We know it because we know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. All the bills will be paid off, the farm will be clear, and that $250,000 to $400,000 will be coming into our community within about 3 years from now. That's progress. I'm talking about farms that was taking money from our pockets and was bringing nothing back to us. I'm saying that those farms will, in 3 years, bring us money. That's progress. You might say, how come they wasn't bringing you anything? Because we are a community of poor, uneducated, inexperienced people. We got a lot of mouths, but when it comes to accepting responsibility, we don't have the qualifications. Now that's the pitiful fact. The pitiful fact is that we don't have people in this community that have agricultural knowledge, farming knowledge, to take the responsibility for a big farm and make them profitable. We don't have it. Another problem is that farming is not as profitable today as it was years ago. Farming wasn't as profitable 5 years ago as it was 10 or 15 years ago. The farming business has become less and less profitable with the years. So what you have to do? The average private farmer, he can't do it. He hasn't the ability. It takes those big corporate farmers who have long experience in the business, great resources at their fingertips, take those people to make it. What you do? You got the land, hold on to the land. Get those responsible people, lease your land to them. They know how to make a profit with it. They pay you for leasing. Now you're getting money, right? You got some people, they're energetic, they're really ambitious. I invite any farmer, any student of agriculture who is ambitious in our community to go down there to the farm. Go down there and work on that farm with that man who's leasing it. Study it. And if you can prove to us that you can do what he's doing, when his lease is up, we will lease it to you. Now, is that fair enough? That's fair enough, isn't it? Any of our members who can show the ability to run that farm for a profit, like that man is doing on the farm, that Caucasian man, like that white man, like Whitey is doing on that farm, any of you who can show the same ability to make a profit, we welcome you right now. We will even help you. Go there. Learn the business, work on the farm, learn the business, and prove to us that you can manage that farm. We will lease the farm to you, or we will lease it to ourselves and make you the manager and pay you a salary when that man's lease is out. Can we be any fairer? Yes. The people in this community are no different than the people in the outer community. The outer community, they are a failure, generally speaking. Our neighborhoods show no economic development, no economic success. Is that right? All right. Our community blame it on the white man, right? Okay, my community is no different. I got people in my community. There's opportunity here. But they won't have to take the initiative. They don't have the ambition to go and pay the price, to learn and struggle up from the bottom, to take over these positions of great responsibility. So instead of admitting their own individual failure, their own failure as an individual, they tell the outer community that the imam is selling all our property to other people, going out of business, getting rid of everything. That's a shame. That's a shame. We have a right now, we got a Salam restaurant on South Side of Chicago. Nice, prestigious business. Nice, prestigious building. We haven't got any ambitious person to go in that building and run it for profit. Any of you here can do it? Any of Farrakhan followers can do it? Is there any John Muhammad followers can do it in Detroit? If they are, come forward. Prove your qualifications. I won't say, oh, you don't follow me, you follow Farrakhan. Prove your qualifications, and you can get the restaurant, Salam restaurant, right now. Prove that you can run it for profit. I don't care if you're Farrakhan's follower, or John Muhammad's follower, or Salah's follower, Reverend Jackson's follower, Jesse Jackson's follower. I don't care who you are. If you can prove that you can manage that business for a profit, come right now. We'll give the building to you, and we don't want you to do nothing but just keep up the building. If you can just keep up the building, don't give us any profit. We want nothing. Keep up the building.